So when we were planning ahead for this month, I suggested to the worship committee that it would be worthwhile to spend some time on heritage. It's a good topic for a congregation going through transition. And so we chose that as the worship theme of the month for October. And then I planned my sermons and I looked more closely at what I planned to say each time I was in the pulpit this month. And I realized that what I had actually done is planned a sermon series on grief. Now, heritage and grief are not unrelated. But I was surprised to find that this common thread was so prominent in a series that was going to be about memory, right? 2 weeks ago, we talked about our ancestors from long ago and living memory, and we had a chance to honor them with pictures and mementos on the altar. And it was important and meaningful for our congregation, for our multi-generational community, to be able to have that time to mourn together. Last week, our Green Sanctuary team transformed grief into hope and gave us concrete steps to be part of the repair of the interdependent web. And next week, we'll delve into Samhain, the pagan festival of the new year, when we honor our beloved dead and find the courage to cross the threshold into the future. Today is about finding solace in science and nature. I'm not entirely sure why grief was the topic that took hold and made itself at home in the worship calendar. Could be a response to the needs of the congregation and the world we're facing. There are personal stories of loss among us. We're missing some of our members in worship this morning who are comforting Joyce Chido at the memorial service for her son. There are recent deaths and anniversaries of deaths that some among us are remembering. And we're also grieving collectively the opportunities we've lost to heal the planet, the death toll from hurricanes and earthquakes worldwide, the struggle to become the America we could be but never really have been, the political decisions that hurt people of color, assault survivors, transgender friends, people with disabilities, and immigrants, among many others. And this congregation is still grieving the departure of two beloved settled ministers. The pain of ministerial transition may or may not be less intense than it was a year or two ago, but it still comes up. So all that is to say, this community is holding a lot. When we are overwhelmed by the world and not sure what to do, let us start where we are. Where we are is rooted in the here and now, in a network of living relationships with people and plants and beings all around us and within us. When we're preoccupied with the forces of death and destruction, we can reframe by connecting with the forces that create and uphold life. And the expression of those forces is going to be a little different for each of us. For some of us, the forces that create and uphold life are nothing less awe-inspiring than science, the scientific processes that govern plants and animals and minerals. And for some of us, the forces that create and uphold life are evidence of an eternal source of love, a love that has always been here and will not let us go. And for some of us, the meaning doesn't matter so much as the experience of being present with diverse forms of non-human life. Whatever your framework, let us start where we are. Environmental science and spirituality are disciplines that move with the times and the tides, even as we draw from ancient wisdom. And lately, when I stop to reflect on the natural world, I'm inspired to be still and to know that I am not alone. Humans have been finding solace in the natural world for a long time. I remember a family funeral years ago for the grandmother of one of my partners. She died at 96 years old and had seemed like a force of nature herself. The funeral began with a reading from Psalms, and the rabbi reminded us that we are like grass which shoots up in the morning. It flourishes and shoots up. By evening, it droops and withers. point being to know how few are our days that our minds may learn wisdom. And soon after that, we were invited to recite together the 23rd Psalm, the one where God maketh me to lie down in green pastures and leadeth me beside still waters. Right? The green and the stillness and the water. Now, outside at that time, the weather was anything but green and still, not at all like it is today. But inside, I imagined the gathered community resting as blades of grass in a meadow and bending gently, part of the family of things, from season to season, from generation to generation. Touching base with the natural world is an enduring form of comfort in spiritual traditions. Green plants and patient stones remind us that we are at once brief and persistent, precious as individuals, yet part of something larger than ourselves. And these are things we need to know when we are grieving, when we are in despair, when we are overwhelmed, when we fear the unknown. Those who came before us knew this and adorned their poetry and songs of comfort with natural imagery, and so did those who came before them, all the way back to the beginning of language. When our search for truth and meaning passes through a difficult place, the world around us and under us and within us can provide touchstones of encouragement. And with apologies for the gendered language of his time, Gesundheit, Ralph Waldo Emerson wrote, "In the presence of nature, a wild delight runs through the man in spite of real sorrows. Nature says, he is my creature, and maugre all his impertinent griefs, he shall be glad with me." Well, Emerson was writing from his own time and worldview, a link in a long chain of seekers who take comfort in our earthly home. And let us forge new links as we deepen awareness of ourselves and our ecosystem. The value of stillness is the ability to reorient. Animals and vegetables and minerals may capture our attention long enough that we can take note of where we are. And sometimes putting ourselves in a position to be around diverse forms of life can boost the power of a spiritual practice. When I'm lost in a spiral of despairing thoughts, meditation techniques that bring my awareness to the here and now help to break the spell. What am I feeling right now? What's right in front of me? Being present, even for just the space of a few breaths, help us to know which way is up. And this is not to say that the present moment is necessarily the fulfillment of hope, right? Sometimes the present moment is not so great. But sometimes stillness means discovering that reality does not match expectations. But there's wisdom in putting aside for a bit what ought to be or what we wish were or what was to find companionship with what is. So let's take a moment and quietly observe with the senses available to you. I see the faces of warm and loving people. I see trees waving in the breeze. I hear the hum of this building. I hear breathing, sharing breath. I see sunlight. And I feel some hope being here among you. Breathing in, I give thanks for this moment. And breathing out, I'm grateful for the ability to give back. One of the things that modern science teaches us about the natural world is that there are processes in motion around us and within us and beyond our immediate ability to perceive. The atoms in our bodies are busily bonding and releasing around the clock. The universe, from the molecules of air around us to the giants of the night sky, is part mystery and part invitation to discovery. Paying attention to the processes of life beyond our immediate perception may offer a way to hope. We are not alone. We are part of nature's chain, not something separate from it. In fact, we're even more connected than we might have imagined, as we heard in the reading from Scott Sampson. Other organisms are not static things at all, he said, but processes deeply and inextricably embedded in the background flow. We're part of the background flow. We're not isolated beings, and this is one place where the transcendentalists, our beloved ancestors, got it wrong. They were spiritually moved by the natural world, and yet they assumed themselves to be observers with dominion over the earth. Ralph Waldo Emerson defined nature as all that is separate from us, all which philosophy distinguishes as the not me. He wrote, "Nature, in the common sense, refers to essences unchanged by man." There he goes again, man. "Space, the air, the river, the leaf." And of course, now we know that those essences are changed. Humans have an impact on the ecosystem. In the 19th century view, there was a clear and permanent barrier between the human and the non-human world. The legacy of the transcendentalists in literature and love for the planet is valuable, yet I worry we have not fully examined what it means to believe in this illusion of separateness. I think that the responsible spiritual search asks us to re-examine our worldview every so often. So when we understand that ourselves can mean our family selves and our communal selves and the selves of this watershed, that implies a different response to challenge. Each one of us is a multitude, and each one of us is some part of something larger than the individual. That has implications for our ethic of care, even in situations where there's nothing we can do to eliminate pain or grief. Offering our companionship can make those times more bearable for each other. Thinking of my place, our place, and the family of things helps me to feel less alone when I'm in despair. Human beings share a significant percentage of our DNA with other mammals. And if the tomato-eating squirrels can thrive, so can we. Reflecting on the animals and vegetables and minerals that I observe in my environment, I'm thankful for the interdependent web of which we are a part. I'm thankful for you all, for people who show up here with open minds and loving hearts and helping hands. I'm thankful for those who protect and defend the natural resources of this watershed. And I'm thankful for every relationship that reminds me of the persistence of life. The spirituality and science of our earthly home offer touchstones of comfort in times of challenge. Let water and stone invite us into stillness. May we know that we are not alone, but embraced in a web of relationships with the planet, including with each other. So be it. Blessed be. Amen. So as we come into deeper awareness of all that we are in this together, we are less separate than it seems. We're united in moving toward justice and compassion, and the congregation shares its abundance with the charity of the month. I'm going to invite Jan Harrelson from the Deaf Access Ministry to speak on behalf of our charity of the month.